You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
What is up, everyone? Welcome to episode 94 of Wins Above Fantasy. Today is Thursday, April 6th. I am filling in hosting duties for Van Burnett, who is currently in India, which sounds like an amazing trip. The timing is a little tough for, being a fantasy baseball nerd and everything and having a podcast. I've been giving him a little slack for that, but we're 1 week into the season. I've been filling him in as he's overseas with the important news, and that's kind of what we're going to do here. We're going to do like a week one recap episode, and to do that, I have a very special guest on. My good friend, not only through baseball, but just in life, and that is Dan Weber. Dan, what's up? How you doing? Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Steve. I filled in your previous podcast life. We did a podcast together, so I hope we still have the mojo together. Happy to be here. I listen to the podcast a lot. You and Van are great, so it's big shoes to fill, but a lot of our relationship centers on fantasy baseball, so happy to talk and get this podcast going.
Yeah, I mean, we do this just in general, so why not have you fill in and come on and do a podcast about it. I mean, this is what we do all day long, like you said, anyway. So we get started, let's tell everyone a little bit about yourself, what you do, your background. I know you have an interesting background in baseball, which is pretty cool. What leagues you play and everything like that, and how you're, just involved in fantasy and everything like that.
Yeah. So I work in sports. Fantasy kind of goes hand in hand. I grew up a Mets fan, so I'm a huge Mets fan, big hockey and baseball guy. I don't want to talk about the last couple of days with the Mets, but, I'm going to the home opener on Friday, which was supposed to be tomorrow, but it got postponed. So that'll be really fun. Currently I am in the finals of my fantasy hockey league, which we call the JV Fantasy Hockey League, which I'm excited about. But, for baseball, I do three leagues. Most of them are head to head, but I've done an NL only league, which was auction, which was really fun. I've done a Roto league. Most of the ones I'm in now are head to head. They're mostly deep leagues, so you really need to be on top of your stuff. You need to be scouring the waiver wire. There really aren't names that you shouldn't know. Like, you should basically know most of the guys on rosters, and you need to act quick. And that's kind of how you can get ahead in fantasy. I feel like when you're early in the year, like around times like now, you need to be able to act quick, pivot, cut bait and pick guys up, because, this is when you find the diamonds in the rough. So kind of like a league, like Steve and I are in together, it's 14 teams, and you got to be really quick to be on the waiver wire and pick up assets.
Yeah, in the daily league too. And I know that that's kind of what we're going to get into, and I think it's a good segue, just like an early strategy, because there really is no time. I think I was talking about it last week with Van. There is no time. It's such a unique time period in fantasy because everything's so new. You don't have as much information. You're still finding out roles and finding out what swing changes and adjustments are actually real. So there's really no time like this as far as like when we could soak in and be a sponge of like all this information. And, I know that you mentioned that, but I always just say to you and to our friends, whatever, like if there's a player that you don't know about, then like nobody knows about them. Like that's how I deep your knowledge goes. So that's why I think it's a great fit that you come on and just talk about everything going on early in this week. And that's kind of what we're going to do. We're going to recap week one of fantasy, just, highlight players that are interesting. We'll get into a bunch of names later on, hitters and pitchers, both good performances and bad. So, it'll be like a primer to sort of catch up if you did take a trip to India and miss the first week or so of fantasy baseball. But I guess to take the long way around to that nice segue that you did there, like your early strategy, is that something that you change throughout the year? Are you normally this aggressive? Are you more aggressive early in the year? Like, how quickly are you dropping guys? Like, is there a certain round that you wouldn't touch? It's just funny. Like, you go to baseball Twitter now, it's like, I know it's too early to drop this guy, but, and then there's a reason of whoever's hot on the waiver wire. And then, you know, whatever eighth round pick that you probably shouldn't be dropping is struggling, or, you know, if like Lars Nootbaar goes to the IL and all of a sudden the preseason darling is no longer as sexy of a name, there's always sort of that thing. Like, do you try to avoid dropping big names? Are you more aggressive? Like, what's your overall
strategy? I like to be aggressive. I think that there's league winners out there now. We just don't know who they are. And you see it every year. There are guys out there that are waiver wire fodder, and they have a hot week, and then it's a hot month, and they're an all-star, and then they're, you know, a top five round pick the next year. There aren't many of them, but they're out there. And so I think the more you can turn your roster over and get in and get shares of guys, that is kind of how you can win. I kind of like to work backwards, kind of like from my, let's say it's a 21 round league, you know, 2019 through 22, you can kind of churn over, you know, dump them, bring somebody else in. It's hard though, because for an example, I have Craig Kimbrel in our league. Mm-hmm. And like, he's gotten shelled twice, but like the Phillies are 1-5, and like, there's no, the closer and, role is undefined.
And he has,
that's going to be a good team.
He hasn't pitched in a safe situation, right? And he like literally has the yips in non-safe situations, which is.
And like, they're 1-5. They're going to get Bryce Harper back and be like probably a wild card team. If he's the closer, that's like a top eight, top seven closer in baseball. But I'm sitting here now, like staring at like, let's say it's like a James Outman. And you're like, that guy could win you a league.
Your mouse is hovering over the drop button on Kimbrel, like, right, like several times a day.
For sure. Right. And I think top 10 rounds you have to be a lot more patient with. But it's the closers now. There are guys that are getting opportunities that, you know, right, if they start, like AJ Puck's a good one. Mm-hmm. I picked him up in our league. He's got great stuff, like, and he's getting save opportunities. He gave up a couple runs here and there, but you watch him and you see why a team like the Marlins wanted to bring him in. You get a guy like him, he could be like a 35, 40 save guy on a Marlins team that's going to, you know, have decent pitching. It's tough to really say a strategy, but I think for me personally, I like to try and grab as much of the hot bats and sexy closers and pitchers and just get shares of them and then see what happens.
Yeah, you kind of just got to throw.
Because they're unknown and
you throw stuff against the wall and see if it sticks. Yeah.
The unknown, you never know.
Yeah.
And like those guys, like I said, can win you leagues versus having some, you know, 15 to 20 homer outfielder. That's just kind of a, you know, somebody who's just going to not really play for you that much.
Yeah. It's definitely a tough line to navigate, and the margins are thin, but I think in general, early in the season, it is better to be more aggressive. And then also you get 6 months of a production rather than an ad in August where you only get two, right? Like in theory, if you find a guy for your roster in April, that's going to help you for more time and for greater volume. And then later in the year, it's just something to sort of think about as to why, you're not being aggressive. All right. And to throw you to a fire before we get into some names, I know you brought up some good ones. If you could only roster, if you had to drop one of Puck or Kimbrel, who are you dropping right now? If that was a decision that you had to make.
Oh man, I would probably drop Kimbrel. That's so hard.
Yeah.
I would drop Kimbrel. I would, because Puck has gotten save opportunities. And I actually think that Marlins team's going to be pretty good. Like
pitching wise.
Maybe
yeah.
Hover.
Yeah.
Right. I think they could be a couple games under 500. They're going to be in low scoring games. I think Puck, you know, he was a really high draft pick. He's got funky stuff. He's like kind of like an Andrew Miller type. Mm-hmm. I see value in him. Unless they do the Dylan Floro thing, which is really frustrating. Kimbrel, it's just like, you're right. He's got the yips and it's like he's a name, but his production might not be that. Mm-hmm. Puck will give you the production. Mm-hmm. Puck is still kind of trending upward. was traded for Blade, which he was like a big prospect. So they want to use him. Kimbrel at the Phillies with their bullpen is always just such a disaster.
And they have, I mean, Dominguez, Sir Anthony Dominguez also like could do the job too. If Kimbrel,
Soto,
yep, Soto,
who's been bad, but like he's closed. Yes,
he's closed before. So yeah, I agree. I would hold on to Puck too. Cool. All right. We got into names a little bit earlier than I thought we would, but that's totally fine. That was a good way to throw you right to the fire with a sort of a quick, would you rather there. We are going to take a quick ad break, and then we are going to get into some interesting names. We'll start off with some hitters and get you caught up on the weekend. We'll be right back. All right, Dan, let's get into it. This is a name that we talked offline a bunch. I know that you were sort of in on him on spring. There were some changes. It was a name that I think you asked us to hit on in a previous episode. But that's Nolan Gorman. He has been pretty good, and I think he's kind of shocked people with how much he's played. I know that there's been some, you know, with the fact that Donovan has second base full time after, you know, the swing change and winning a gold glove last year, a crowded outfield, Jordan Walker making the team. I think Nolan Gorman was kind of forgotten because it just was kind of assumed that he would be like the odd man out, but he really hasn't been. He's at least on the strong side of the platoon being a lefty and has gotten a good amount of at bats. I know there's some drama going on with Tyler O'Neill, whether he hustled out a run home and all that going on. I don't want to get too much into that, but hey, that opens up another spot for Gorman. What have you seen about Gorman that's encouraging? Why was he a name that you wanted to highlight early on?
With Gorman, you know, he's a sexy name because he was a big prospect. And not all prospects are linear. And I'm always trying to buy low on the guy who might have came up and not performed, but you can get him really cheap that next year. The Cardinals believe in him. Unfortunately for Gorman now, I feel like in a lot of leagues, he's probably picked up he's probably picked up already or probably owned.
In most 14, 15 leagues, yeah, he was probably a big name on Fab if there was a weekly league.
Right.
He might still be out there in 12. Like, and I think he still could have value.
I'll let you speak to the position, to the battles there, because you seem to know it with Brandon Donovan and Newt Barr
Van's a Cardinal fan, so I know their depth chart like the back of my hand. And also, I have a ton of shares of Cardinals just across all of my leagues this year, so I am definitely in tune there. But
I would say it's great power. You know, it's like 70 grade power, a great left-handed swing, so he's going to play the better side of the platoon. He's only DH this year, I think.
Yeah, that's
correct. I don't know if he's played it. So he's probably just second base eligible. But if we get into it, you know, his barrel percentage is 25%. Exit velocities are about the same. I saw his walk rate was up 20%. So he's probably seeing the ball a little better. I had said, asked you guys to talk about an article I'd seen where he had adjusted to the high fastball in spring training and was really starting to cause damage and turn on it a little bit and not be so susceptible to it. And for a big prospect like that, that might be all the difference. You know, if you had the ball hit off Chris Bassett, man, like it was like a 440 foot shot. Like it was impressive.
There is no doubt about his power. Like he ran ISOs, like, you know, well north of 200, most of his stops in the minors. You know, there were some stints here and there when he moved up a level in 2019, but still, you know, in 2022 and when he was sent down to the minors, he hit 16 home runs in 43 games and had a 310 ISO, which is ridiculous. So the power is there. But like you said, and what you hinted at, I think the most encouraging thing, and it's something that is somewhat meaningful in this short sample, it's the plate skills. He's striking out at just 23.5% of the time, which is down from 33% last year, right? Like when you get to that 33% range, like unless you're hitting like 40 home runs, you're kind of not really playable.
You're unplayable.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it with a certain third baseman on the Rangers.
Yeah. And his O swing, so his chase rate, the amount that he's swinging outside the zone, is down from 34% to 17.4%. Sure, there might be some regression in both of those numbers, but like, in order for Gorman to be a useful fantasy player, he needs to strike out like 28-29% of the time, which, you know, that's all he kind of needs to do. And I'm not saying that this is what's going to happen, but you know, when Austin Riley first came up, like, he was striking out above 30% of the time and then just slowly chiseled away at that K rate and became this all around player that, you know, truly broke out. I'm not saying that Gorman's going to be a, you know, first, second rounder, but he could be a useful fantasy player with just a little bit improvement in the K rate, which is, he's showing signs of doing so far, which is encouraging.
And part of the reason I like Gorman, and it's a lot of the reason I like a lot of these guys, are Gorman was a mid first round pick a couple of years ago. You know, I think it was 18th or 19th overall in 2019. Like, you're talking about a guy that they have a lot invested in who has first round ability. Not everyone comes to the major leagues and tears the cover off the ball. It's the major leagues for a reason. These guys can make adjustments, and there's ability in there that was the reason he was the 19th best, you know, player in a draft class.
Yep.
So I really like him. He's an interesting player, and you know, if at a position second base it's up and down. If you can get him in there and he's going to start kind of running with that DH a little bit, I think it's great. It's a great value.
Yep. And I couldn't agree more. I think that second base, especially with the Altuve injury, is more shallow than you think. And if he hits, like, the Cardinals are just going to find a way to get him in the lineup. And, you know, like we said before, like, the downside is the strong side of a platoon at DH. So, I don't think it's too bad. And I think it's worth a look if he's still out there in 12 team leagues. Shifting to another former first round pick, I believe in that same draft. I think he went two picks after Nolan Gorman. That's Bryce Turang, another second baseman, for the Milwaukee Brewers. I know he hit a grand slam that kind of put him on the map, earlier this week. The speed is, you know, something that he was known for and was kind of, you know, this next big prospect that's going to come up and steal a lot of bases. And I don't know, it's another one like Gorman. I just feel like he was kind of forgotten in draft season. I know Gray over at Razzball put out a funny tweet about how, you know, Bryce Turang is the classic victim of someone who just decided in October that his ADP was 400 and he just stayed 200 picks less than where he probably should have been going. The writing was kind of on the wall with him making the team, right? Out of spring training. And then now this Luis Arias injury sort of cleared up some playing time. I know Turang's playing second base, but they DFA'd Hira, who got sent down and didn't have any options. So Turang, like, won this role and kind of really didn't get noticed until he had that big grand slam. And now he has two stolen bases and is holding his own. What are your thoughts on Turang? Do you think he's viable? And then I guess we could sort of compare these two. It's a nice little would you rather segue there too. Two second baseman. I know Turang might have some position eligibility at shortstop because I think that's what he came up as. So the nod might be there, but we could look at them as two second basemen. What are your thoughts overall on Turang and how interested are you in his hot start?
I like the player, and you know, this is kind of, it's a funny way to evaluate players, but I do it a lot, is my team, the Mets, play teams and you really get to see all their at bats and kind of zone in on, hey, this guy's like a tough at bat. This guy's killing us, you know, for Jesse Winker, who kills the Mets all the time, but you really kind of zone in on you watch plate appearances versus just kind of scouting box scores. And he was a pain. He was an absolute pain. And, you know, you saw the ability that made him a first round pick and a top 100 prospect. he's still 23 years old. I mean, people, I feel like, thought like he was like 28 and 29 years old. Still like a big piece for the Brewers and their future. He had 13 homers and 34 steals last year. So like there's a little bit of that combo power speed. I was really impressed with him. He made a running catch that was awesome. It was like kind of in that Bermuda Triangle of like right fielder, first base. I don't know who was at first base. It might have been like even Luke Voit, maybe.
Telez, maybe.
Telez, yeah, one of the two who don't move very well. And he covered so much ground. You know, I always said it with Andrés Giménez to you too before he kind of blew up. Like Terang is just a ball player. You know, you watch him and you're like, man, that's good at baseball.
I think
like,
that's
there are.
I think that's a really good like 90th percentile outcome comp for Terang. Like if the power is anything more than what we originally thought it was when he was, you know, hitting like 1-2-5 homers in 2021 or, you know, six across two levels and putting up, you know, ISOs below 100. But if he's more like, you know, a 150, 175 ISO, maybe, you know, 15 homer pop with that speed, like the speed is legit. It's 70 grade speed. Like that's what he's known for. That's why he was an interesting fantasy prospect. I think that, you know, Giménez comp might be, you know, a good one. I don't know if he has the hit tool, at least just prospect grades wise. And like Giménez, like kind of knew that he could hit, coming up through the minors. But who knows? Maybe there was a grade or two off on Terang. But I definitely agree. He does look like a guy that should be of interest in kind of all leagues, at least while he's hot now too. You know, and never really struck out that much, and always took walks, like just double digit walk rates at every single stop. And he's doing that at the majors too. And in the small sample, it's only struck out 6% of the time. So what, in 17 plate appearances, that's once or twice. So, seems like it could be pretty good.
He's not chasing either.
No, he's not. Like, which is nice. Yeah. He seems to have a good knowledge of the zone.
Guys like him too, they're going to put the ball in play, and he's fast, man. 34 steals last year. That kind of, when you see those type of numbers, and then you kind of see the stolen base environment that the league has turned into now, you kind of start dreaming of high totals.
Where you used to think with a guy like that, it's like, oh, can we get like 15 to 20? But now maybe this year it's like, oh, am I getting 30 plus? Is that pretty cool? I know, you know, maybe the league will adjust and figure out how to hold on runners a little better, but it doesn't look like it through the first week. So guys with that kind of speed can kind of go at will, which I think is what the league intended and what the rule change intended. So I know it's context dependent, and it's probably the cop-out answer is, you know, if you need power, go with Gorman. If you need speed, go with Terang. But if you had to choose one, who are you choosing? I'm giving you all the tough questions.
I know. And I am a big Gorman believer. So this is going to be hard, but I would go with Terang because I think that, like I said before, Gorman is kind of like a slugger, and at DH, that's fine. But Terang is going to play second base, maybe even give you a little shortstop. And he's playing two of the most important positions, and they're relying on that. So he's going to be in the
lineup. Brewers need any offense they can get. They're going to rely on him more than the Cardinals need to rely on Gorman. So I would tend to agree there. But two interesting names in the West, and I think they should be on the radar even in shallower leagues. Next name we want to talk about, your boy, someone I think that you've been on since last year. That's Jake Fraerle. The outfielder for the Reds. Let's talk about what you like about Fraerle. I know he had a really, really interesting last 2 months of the season and has kind of continued that. And I think Cincinnati can kind of be a sneaky, good fantasy offense. What are you seeing there with Fraerle?
You know, Fraerle, he's 27. So there are certain people that see him and see, I know he was on Seattle at one point, and I don't know where he was before that. He's kicked around, and he was a journeyman. So people kind of don't want to buy in because they see a previous career. But I think we need to start teaching ourselves and learning that guys can fix their swings with all this stuff that they're doing. Guys, you know, they study and they see what their deficiencies are, and they can change who they are as baseball players and turn into great players. And so Fraley's one of those guys that I kind of streamed last year. He had 259 with 12 homers, four steals, and an 812 OPS in 68 games in Cincinnati. But his second half was a 903 OPS with 11 homers, a 377 on base, and a 5-ton slug. Yeah. Yeah. Five homers in August, five in September, 873 OPS at home, and 765 on the road. So, you know, it's not like bandbox Cincinnati and then nothing on the road. And his spring, like, I didn't understand. So, okay, you know, a second half on a crappy team like the Reds where you're playing, you know, whatever, you can get lost in that. But this spring, 982 OPS, three homers, 14 RBIs, a 600 slug, and he stole five bases. Like, this is a sneaky 2020 guy that when you watch them, he's got great pop. And I think that people just see it, like I said, a 27-year-old on a bad team, and they think, you know, he's playing because they don't have anything else. And that's not the case. Like, this guy can hit. And that's kind of how I feel about him. And I might be on my own with Fraley, but and they've been sitting him against lefties, which is kind of annoying. But in the one game, I think they sat him, and then he came in and might have homered, which was funny. But I like the player. I like the ballpark. I kind of like the offense, like you said. So that's where I am with him. Get on board if you want to.
And with the
probably still have no.
And with the Reds, like we saw Winker a few years ago, work his way, you know, he just hit so much that he sort of forced them to play versus lefties, to, like, find out what they had as an everyday player. And then, you know, when Winker was healthy, he was a really good everyday player with the Reds. So there is sort of that, you know, that path for him to earn more playing time and not just be a platoon. And with teams like that are, you know, in theory, not really going for it, at least yet, or aren't in their winning window, like, there is a path to carve out playing time and hit your way out of a platoon. Whereas, you know, if he was on like the Braves or something, right? Like, it's like, okay, you have one job. It's, you're going to mash righties. You're not facing any lefties. Like, you know, if Cincinnati plays a soft throwing lefty, like, hey, why not? Let's see if you can hold your own here. That sort of thing. And yeah, I just keep going back to those splits, man. I mean, in September, he had a 140, in August, he had a 142 WRC plus, and September 134 WRC plus. So he was, you know, 42% and 34% better than the league in those 2 months. So he was really, really good. Already attempted a steal, which is nice. Has that homer, like you said. The max EVs are good. He already hit a ball 111.7 miles an hour, which is, you know, close to elite, which is, you know, something that you can look at in a small sample this year. I mean, he has a 10% bower rate. It's only, you know, we're not close to the stabilization point for that, but hey, still pretty good for just those 15 plate appearances. So I like Fraley a lot. I think it's another good name to keep in mind and probably roster at least for like Reds home games. Like, I absolutely want a piece of Jake Fraley versus like every righty that he faces at home. Like, it's a great, you know, if you have a deep bench, like, and you're able to slot him into like one of your five outfield slots or something. Like, if the Reds have a bunch of home games, like, I am absolutely playing him basically for every single one of those. Sticking with an outfielder, another tooled up outfielder that I really like. I've liked him since his days in Houston. That's Jose Siri. He is, you know, another guy that might not be getting full playing time. I think he set a game or two with the Rays, but he's off to a really, really good start. He has, you know, all of the raw tools, the speed, the power. It's just a question of plate discipline. He does strike out a lot, and that sort of kept him out of an everyday playing role at Houston. And at Tampa last year and this year, I mean, he's still striking out 30% of the time, but in those other at bats, he's slashing 333, 375, 867. He has two home runs, a steal. And then this stat, I thought of you when I saw it, I knew that you would love it. In spring training, every single time that there was an open base in front of him, he attempted a steal. So whenever he was on base and there wasn't a runner in front of him, he tried to steal it. And he was successful, I think, 10 of 11 times. So, you know, he has the speed. He has the power. I think that, you know, the Rays, like, find these guys and get the most out of exactly this. Like, if there's any bit of improvement on that 30% strikeout rate, you know, if he gets it to that 28, 27%, like, he has the tools to be like an impact player all year. And there is some encouraging stuff. He's reaching less. He chased 40% of the time last year. It's down to 22%. You know, the contact rate's not great, but it's still that small sample. And, you know, he's just sort of swinging for the fences. And it's kind of working now. But I love Jose Siri's tools. I have him in a few places as shallow as a 14-team league. So I know he's batting ninth, which isn't the greatest lineup context, but I feel like he could take that Rays center field job and run with it.
I'm with you on all of this. I love him going from Houston to the Rays. It's kind of like, if those teams are interested in your players, keep them, he always said. You know what? He's fast. He hits the ball hard. Like, what more is there not to like? That's baseball in a nutshell, is hitting the ball hard and being a fast, great, you know, fast player who can play defense. You know, he's elite defender on a team that values defense up the middle. And people say he might be the fastest guy in baseball. I don't know who has that crown right now.
It might be Corbin Carroll currently. I think he like leads by.
Yeah, you might be right. It was
but he's up there. He's up there.
Yeah. There was somebody else I was watching the game and someone said someone and I was like, oh yeah, I'll think of it later. 80th percentile in exit velocity and Cash likes him. He says he's going to play every day. That's huge. I think, on a team of the Rays where they really like churn and burn.
Dude, they ran
platoon. Like,
they ran Kevin Kiermaier out there because of his elite defense for how long, right? You know, like, I think that's a really, really good point with the fact that, you know, even if he does have a close to 30% strikeout rate, his defense might keep him in. And if that's the case, if he's an everyday player, the speed and power are going to show, even if he is striking out that much. But if he does cut that down, then, like, you know, we could start talking about moving up the lineup, all that good stuff. So I think it's a really interesting aim. I've always liked Jose Siri, and, you know, I think it's a good name to keep an eye on. May still be out there in a lot of leagues.
One more thing on Siri, I did see that he once had 40. I saw this stat online. He once had 46 steals in fewer than 500 plate appearances as a 21-year-old. Wow.
Yeah.
So like,
he likes to run.
Extrapolate that over with the bigger bases and, you know, 550 at bats. Like, you're talking Jose Reyes type stolen base numbers.
Yeah.
You know. He's 70s, so
yeah, he
definitely got to keep an eye on for sure.
Absolutely, I love Jose Siri, so all aboard that hype train. Another guy that another Cincinnati Red. This is more than interesting enough. He's homered. I know the Reds got rained out Wednesday as we record this, but three games in a row before that. That's Jason Vossler. I believe he came over from the Giants. Was originally with the Cubs. I think he was drafted by. Stopped at the Padres. So another one of these guys that has been all around. Like, he's older guy. He's turns 30 in September. So it's going to be his age 29 season, but he's been all over. Like, you know, you go to his player page and you see, you know, a bunch of rows with all the minor league stops, but fits that sort of model. Is like, hey, you know, he's finally getting a shot. I know he was an interesting prospect. I believe he was Rule 5 from the Padres potentially with the Giants in 2021.
He's kicked around.
Yeah. But he was interesting because he hit 20 homers in the minors in 2019, then hit 15 with the Giants. And, like, you know, I don't think that was the year the Giants kind of had that out of nowhere run where they expected, you know, where they were really good. And
everyone was home.
Exactly.
And then everyone stopped.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
But you know, he's always put up, you know, pretty decent WRC pluses, and now he's kind of this, another lefty masher, in Cincinnati. Like, it seems like the Reds have done like a good job of accumulating, like, kind of like what the Giants did. Like, they're finding these tooled up guys, giving them playing time and seeing what they got. And so far, Vossler with the 3 home runs in the 5 games, the strikeout rate has been high and he hasn't walked yet, but he could be an interesting player. Do you think he's more of like a streamer and a hot bat that you're just riding? Are you more interested in Fraley? What are your thoughts on?
I think he's a stream.
Yeah.
I think he's a stream hitter in a good situation facing, you know, a couple righties in a row on a bat. Like, they're going in the face of the Nationals or something, and you can get him not facing Patrick Corbin and whoever else is in that mm-hmm. rotation. Sure. I will say Don Bosco grad. I don't know if
I did not. No, Jason. No, I did not. That's cool. Yes.
And the swing is tailor made for the ballpark. Yeah. It's like, it's a beautiful swing. Like Fraley, I like Fraley. Fraley's his swing is a little like, it's kind of short to the ball and he's a smaller guy. This guy Vossler's swing is awesome. It is long and powerful. And, he played 36 games last year with the Giants and had an 8.11 OPS. And the Giants are so good in the lab, recreating people's swing, you know, making people getting value out of their swing. Why they let him go, I don't know. It said when he was playing third base, he had an 8.81 OPS and a 5.19 slug, which is nice. Spring training, 8.56 OPS. So you're kind of looking at that carryover. I think he can play a little outfield, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're
right. If that eligibility comes into it, it could be nice. And maybe if he gets hot, he can kind of do the Fraley thing of getting consistent plate appearances. Mm-hmm. I think he's more like a streamer. He'd be on the lower end of some of these guys that we've talked about. But it's just a guy to keep an eye on. And if all of a sudden, you know, he's got 6 or 7 homers and it's, you know, we're through the first month of the season.
Yeah, it might
be. You might as well have to pick him up and hope and see what happens.
Exactly. And then, you know, you could find out if the streak is sort of continuing as the Reds play some home games here. I think it's a good call. Another guy who's probably more than the streamer, but at the same position, Josh Jung, 8th overall pick, another guy that seems like he's kind of post-hype that is right up your alley. I know this was a name you wanted to throw on the rundown, so I'll let you sort of let her run with what you like about Jung.
Yeah, you know, big prospect. Last year was kind of a lost year. He got hurt. I think he tore his labrum right when the lockout ended.
He was set to set to make the opening day roster. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he wound up coming up at the end of the year and had 5 homers and 2 steals and, you know, some intriguing things, but the plate discipline needs work. He was a career 322 hitter in the minors, which is, you know, that's a big number for nowadays. 320 is like, nobody hits that anymore. The K rate is a little scary. Especially on sliders, you know, he's striking out 40% of the time on sliders, which is worrisome, but it's a shallow position, third base, that in a good lineup, the lineup's good. You know, I know you have Simeon shares, you have Seager as well.
It's sneaky good. The Rangers have a sneaky good lineup. I like Jonah Heim a bit, you know, there's some things that they do well there, and could be a better team. And I think that Jung could be a real, like, he is a, like, you know, build your way for the Rangers to make the playoffs. Like, Jung has a rookie of the year type season, which, you know, mm-hmm. he definitely has the tools to do that. Yeah. Like, sure. He struck out 28% of the time at AAA last year, but before that, the K rate really wasn't an issue, which I think was why he was such a good prospect. Like in 2021, he had 9 homers in 35 games at AAA with just a 22% strikeout rate. So that's sort of what you dreamed on with him as a prospect. And, you know, the chase rate isn't horrible, which is encouraging as an early sign. You know, the hard hit rate is super high right now. Again, short sample, but I don't think the power is what you question. It's more the plate skills, and there is some room for this to be like a sneaky AL Rookie of the Year candidate. I believe he still has eligibility. Yeah, he only had 26 games at the majors last year, 102 plate appearances. So he still should have eligibility, but I think Jung is kind of being slept on. Like, if this was a guy that like hadn't come up or hadn't been injured, like, and was like a call up post Super Two, or like one of the, you know, before they changed the rules and like, you know, the Chris Bryant treatment of being called up 2 weeks in the season, like, this is a big fab guy. You know, I think the fact that he hit like 204, 235, 418 last year in that small sample, despite the five homers and two steals, kind of dampened the expectations. But if that was like, you know, if three more hits fell and it was like 250, like, I think the hype would have been crazy on him this year. Like, it's just kind of silly how that small of a sample can impact that. So I really like him, and I think that it's a good call and should be. I think he's rostered in most leagues, but could be someone to go after if there's like, you know, an early season trade target, if someone's concerned with the K rate.
For sure. I two things to add to that. So he's big on Rapsodo, and he's like a hitting nerd is what I read in a Fangraphs article, which is awesome to hear. So he's consistently looking to figure out what's plaguing him at the major league level and fix it, or fix his swing, or add loft to his swing. You know, so he is constantly studying video. That's awesome to hear. Also, what's the difference between him and like Brett Beatty? Like, you know, Brett Beatty, I love Brett Beatty. Brett Beatty went eighth overall, or I think he might've been, it was like, you know, anywhere in that eighth to 12th overall range in the first round. He's a big prospect. Beatty came up last year. He had two homers. He didn't hit, and it was a very small sample size. And people are like clamoring for Brett Beatty and can't wait to roster him. And a guy like Jung is like,
he's already up. He's here. Nobody. Like, he's here, you know, like it's, right. There should be.
So I, outside of it being big market and
they kind of you know, lose their luster once they're already here. Right. Like, that's kind of what I was saying. Like, if,
and that's the best time to get in on these guys is, you know, somebody has a cup of coffee. Remember Mike Trout's cup of coffee.
Yeah, it was horrible. Like, terrible. It was horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, guys are getting adjusted to the big league lifestyle and the big stadiums and every pitcher throwing 95 miles an hour. But you know, like, these guys were first round picks for a reason, high first round picks for a reason. Let them adjust. And if people want to get out on them early, then just wait, you know, see if you can get your hands on them, and, you know, they'll prove you right. And he's a perfect guy for that. Yeah.
I think he could have a big year. And if he's out there in like any shallower leagues or available for trade in any deeper ones, I'm super interested. A guy that I love, and another, maybe this is kind of like a post hype show. It didn't mean to be. It's got the guys who started off the hot starts, but that's Jorge Mateo. And we know what Jorge Mateo does, like, on the bases. Like, he stole 35 bases last year. Is 4-for-4 on steals already this year. But what's super interesting about Mateo currently is the fact that he has 11.8% strikeout rate and an 11.8% walk rate. So he's walking the same amount that he's striking out, which is not something that Mateo ever did. It was like minuscule walk rates, high strikeout rates, and like, you hope that he somehow got on base and was able to steal. But, oh yeah, on top of that, he has two home runs, and they were absolute tanks. Like, they weren't wall scrapers. Yeah, they were like 440-foot homers. Like, you know, when you go to Baseball Savant, like, the daily distance leaders, like, Mateo's been on there twice with his two home runs. So it's super encouraging. What are you seeing with Mateo? Is this like another
– I missed the boat on Mateo everywhere, and I'm like, I'm not kicking myself about it, but – I just wasn't really paying attention last year that much. Yeah. You know those guys where like you just don't pay attention.
You didn't have any shares. Like, it kind of just happened. Yeah, and he had his flaws, right? Yeah. He struck out a lot, so like it's like all right, you know.
But then I started peeling back, you know, peeling back the layers a little bit, and so 35 homers last, 35 steals and 13 homers last year. So I mean, he was running and he was hitting, you know, hitting for power. I do have a little trivia for you. So 35 steals, 13 homers. He was one of four. So five guys did that last year, and he was one of five guys that did that last
30,
year.
Sorry, say that again. 35 steals?
13 homers, 35 steals. Okay. Two are it's two American League Easters. And the I'll say the three of the four were top five round players. So these are guys that are like big time fantasy guys. And the last one is a guy that you like near and dear to your heart, who is like,
okay,
you always so roster.
No, Turner didn't have 35 steals last
no,
year.
No, he didn't.
No,
he didn't steal. I think he stole 29.
Like 27. It was a low total. How are these names not, how am I not rattling off? This is embarrassing. I'm trying to think of like the high steal guys. No, Judge didn't have 30 steals. He had a high amount, but not anywhere close to that. Give me one that may start.
So I'm going to give you the hardest one. Tommy Edman.
Tommy Edman. Okay. Julio Rodriguez has got to be another one, right? No. Wow.
So two AL East. Two A. They're
Lindor, did he have 35 steals?
Nope.
Or 30 steals? No. No. Okay. Witt.
Yes. Witt. Bobby Witt Jr.
Okay.
And so now there's two guys left in the AL East, and they're not, it's not.
Rosarena.
Yes.
And Mullins, his teammate.
Yes. Okay. Nice. Good work.
Yeah. I had to think because it was just 13 homers. I was thinking more of high end homers. It's more of the steals guys that they
got to think of the high end bags. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So anyway, so he's to getting back to the point though, he's one of five guys that did that last year. And also again, I know I keep coming back to this. He was a big prospect traded for Sonny Gray many
Yankees?
Moons ago.
Yankees?
Yeah. Prospect. Yeah. Yeah. James Caprillion, he was somebody that people believed in and built and thought that they could build around. And the Yankees, they rarely let these guys go and pick the wrong guys. But the leash is going to be so long there. And, you know, I'm seeing a, you know, top six shortstop?
I mean, if he has that much the power, if he does what he does power and steals wise, and you sort of inflate the bag to like 45 with him because he stole 35 before the rules, and there's any bit of gain in this plate skills, then yes, I could see it. If the strikeout rate starts to crater, like it's like the floor though is last year, which I know was at 82 WRC plus. It's not like a great real life bat, and people, you know, Gunnar Henderson was coming over, and you know, I think that's kind of why he didn't have as much hype as he did in draft season, because like it kind of was just assumed that Mateo would get a little bit less playing time, but it looks like he might be like here to stay in that lineup, like especially if he's going like this. So there's top five shortstop upside for sure.
One more point on Mateo. One of the guys I work with, Josh, who's a big fantasy guy, he told me he's a big Mateo guy, and he was like talking about Mateo, and he said he had 40 points higher in the second half. Which is, you know, he was batting 200 in the first half.
Yeah.
You know, for a speed guy, that's really low. You know, 240, all of a sudden, like maybe he's putting more balls in play. Mm-hmm. He's beating things out with speed. And that just becomes so much more palatable.
And
240
and like,
with the
and like when and they're the hitting homers. When they're hitting 200, there's weeks where like they're literally not getting on base. So you don't get any of those steals. And then if they're hitting 240, like they're getting on base more. Like, you know, that's all he needs to get to. And then if he does cut the strikeout rate at all, it's with his speed, you could easily start bumping that average up to like 250 with a guy who should run a high BABIP in theory. All right. Another one that I would have never guessed that we'd be talking about this name is like a hot start, interesting start for the first week of fantasy season, but it's Joey Gallo. Joey Gallo has 3 home runs, hitting 250 in 17 plate appearances. Looks kind of like old Joey Gallo on the Twins. He looks really, really comfortable. Like, you know, I with the Yankees, he just looked so, so lost. Like, he just looked like a guy.
Water.
Yeah. Yeah. Just could not get comfortable at all. And now it looks like he's finally sort of found his home, and he's got three bombs. I know he hit another one that like just died at the wall, I think on Tuesday, versus a pretty good pitcher too. I forget who it was, but I just saw a bunch of tweets. Maybe.
Is it Sandy?
No, because Sandy pitched today. It was yesterday.
No, Lizardo.
Lizardo was. Oh, so maybe it was Sandy. I think he took Sandy Alcantara to like the wall. And like he barreled him up, and like people were like, "Whoa, like maybe this is something." But you know, I mean, he's still striking out. He's doing what he's doing, but kind of we missed, like, even, you know, before that the peak 2019 Joey Gallo, where he had that really good run of 17 games. And even in 2018, when he hit 40 home runs, there was always stretches. Even in 2021, when he had 38 homers, that like Gallo was like the hottest hitter on the planet. And right, there was always a 2-week stretch. Last year that never happened, and it just was never going to happen. But hey, maybe that version of Joey Gallo's back, where you can get super hot for a little bit. What do you think? Is this someone that you're interested in? I know he was a hot ad last week and has kind of continued that. So what are your thoughts on Gallo?
Yeah. I don't think he's 30 yet. So like people are ready to like run him out of the league. It wasn't working in New York. Minnesota is a perfect landing spot for him. You know, we're talking about a guy who 2021, he led the league in walks and strikeouts, but he hit 38 home runs. So like, you know what you're getting. You're going to pick Gallo up and he's going to hit you 6 home runs in a week and win you a head-to-head week. You're going to pick him up when he's playing in Colorado, or he's facing crappy righties that he's just going to hit homers off of. I like the player. I do. And I get it. He was terrible in New York. And if you're a Yankee fan, you're probably like, I'm never rostering Joey Gallo ever. But he's cheap power. And
good OBP in theory.
Sure. I'm in. Because the value is just, it's so depressed. Like, this is a guy who could lead the league in homers. He could hit 50 home runs. There are how many guys that can hit 50 home runs in baseball? Like Pete Alonso, Aaron Judge, Kyle Schwarber. And Joey Gallo is in that class of like elite 80 grade power. Giancarlo Stanton. Like there's not 10 guys that can do that. And he's one of them. So if you can live with the warts, there is a player in there that is really valuable. And
the cost might be free right now. So
nothing. Yes.
Really good. Another guy I want to pivot to quickly. Logan Ohapi. I still can't get over that it's actually pronounced Ohapi and not Ohap, but it is. It's Ohapi. Former Phillies prospect. He was traded for Brandon Marsh last trade deadline, I believe, and has gotten off to a really good start. Homered again today. I believe he's got 2 now, and looks really good. I think there's some good reviews that he's working well with the pitching staff. Latani really likes throwing to him. Which, hey, that's a really good thing. What are your thoughts on Ohapi? Does he have catcher one? And is he one catcher? You know, leagues where there's one catcher, do you think he's viable there?
I do. You call it the catcher carousel, where you're on it and then you're off it, and then you're picking a guy up and you're dropping, and you're just like praying that you can just get a catcher who can stay on your roster.
You need to waste your ads on every week, yeah.
I know, it's the worst. And I think that I think that Ohapi can be somebody that can get you off the catcher carousel. The roster, it's a pretty stacked lineup. I know everyone likes to poke fun at the Angels, but with the Trout and Otani and Taylor Ward, Rendon, we'll see what happens with him. I'm still a believer, despite all the fan hijinks there. He 280 last year with 25 homers. He's like one of 13 prospects to do that. like one of four catchers. There's a future. It was a good trade. They traded a, you know, a third, fourth outfielder for a catcher who can, you know, he could hit, easily hit 20 home runs if he's playing every day. And like you said, the reviews are great from the pitching staff. That's very important because the catcher isn't a throwaway mm-hmm. position. Like, you know, you have to be able to sync with a five man staff. I'm in. I think that I think he might be going fast right now. Like his shares are going.
Yeah.
Going
and he was probably already gone. He was probably already gone in two catcher leagues. And then especially maybe even sure. one catcher leagues when like the news got out that Max Stassi was hurt. Like, cause there was a news that he wasn't going to make the team and then Stassi got hurt. And now like, this is sort of the thing where I think that people might be hesitant because Stassi's potentially coming back soon. Like this is one of the things where I would just hold on to the skill and like the Angels are doing everything to try and convince Ohtani to stay and to actually put together a good team for once. Like if they're serious about that at all, which I think they are, they're going to have him Ohapi as their 1C, their shout out Nico Hischier 1C, their first catcher. But I really like it and think that he's, you know, power bat at batting average skill at a catcher position. Like usually you're getting one or the other, like, you know, assuming that they're just not going to be the greatest hitter. Ohapi looks like he could be an actual good hitter. We are going to take our second ad break. We'll be right back and talk some pitchers. All right, Dan, let's get into it. Not as many names on the pitching front. I know we're running a little long here coming up on an hour, but we got some names to talk about. The first situation I wanted to run by you is what's going on in Arizona. And that's Madison Bumgarner. He was sent back to Arizona after a horrible start. And just, you know, there's been reports that he's like not changing his arsenal or adapting to like the stuff that he has now. And it's just basically been an all around disaster. But I think there's some interesting names there. What are your thoughts going on with some guys like Brandon Pfaadt, who didn't do great numbers wise in his first AAA start, but you know, the stuff looked like it was there. Dre Jameson, who actually got a save, but was sort of beat out for Ryan Nelson, who was okay, I believe, in his first start. But what are your thoughts in Arizona? And what do you have your eye on as far as who could potentially take that spot? And you know,
it's a revolving door there. And, you know, it's kind of like musical chairs and Jameson getting a claw save is funny. You know, you're
also
like,
interesting.
Then, Pfaadt, like I think that his stuff is great. Nelson, I like. I think Nelson has that fastball. When you watch him, it jumps. It's like that 96 mile an hour fastball that guys are late on because of his arm. You know, the way he releases the ball, it's like that kind of high spin rate, 96, 97, that like guys can't get on top of, versus it being like that, like I would say like that Kyle Farnsworth 97 that like everyone just
the ball straight down the middle. Yeah.
Right. And like, yeah, so I think it's just a situation you have to monitor and be tuned into the beat writers on Twitter and kind of in on the conversation and just, you know, there'll be a narrative about what's going to happen next and you just kind of have to follow it and see who they're going to, you know, put on the bump. Either look for days that there are open spots in the rotation. And then maybe grab one of those guys and just hope that you can get him. Because in deep leagues, they're going to go quickly. But like a guy like Ryan Nelson, like I picked him up this week and he didn't look great against San Diego. But I'm going to see what happens on Sunday.
See what happens with Bumgarner too. Yeah, exactly. And then another thing I wanted to touch on this too, but all the stuff, like there's pitching models now that have leaderboards on Fangraphs, you know, Saris's Stuff Plus. Pitching bot. So there's now, you know, when you go to the pitching leaderboards, there's pitch modeling tab and you can look at that. And to sort of back up what you were saying about, Ryan Nelson's fastball, you could sort by, you know, Fastball Stuff Plus. His Fastball Stuff Plus is 123, right in between Shane McClanahan and Drew Rasmussen, 15th overall for starters. And despite that poor start, he's got a 115 stuff plus. So it's like WRC plus, like 100 is average. 115 is pretty good. The location wasn't great. But hey, you know, when you have that good of stuff, you can kind of get by with it. And, you know, who knows, maybe it was, you know, I believe it was, he had a few starts last year, which was pretty good, but, you know, first start of season, San
small
Diego.
Cup of coffee. Last
yeah.
Year.
And was good. And was yeah, good. It was, like 18 and was good. So
it was good. It's two quality starts. Yeah.
I think that, you know, in due time, that Diamondbacks rotation is going to have Nelson, Thott, and Dre Jameson in it.
Why not?
You know, like,
and Gallen, you know, yeah, all this. Yeah, like,
they have
let these kids throw.
They have Zach Davies, I think, there, who's just not good. Bumgarner, who's not good. So there's some spots to go around. All right, another guy that, you know, comes up when you look at the Stuff Plus leaderboard. That's Graham Ashcraft. He is, if you through the starts. On heading into Tuesday, it hasn't updated for Wednesday when we're recording this. So Otani missed the start, DeGrom missed the start, but the guys ahead of Graham Ashcraft are, or by missed start, it's not included in this data yet. Graham Ashcraft is fourth on the Stuff Plus leaderboard behind Otani, Hunter Green, DeGrom. Ashcraft has, you know, he sort of made a name for himself with that, like, you know, the 100-mile-an-hour cutters he was throwing last year. This stuff is just insane. He didn't translate it to strikeouts or great results last year, but it looks like he could potentially be making this step. And the Reds have some really, really good, interesting young pitchers. Another theme in the show, I guess, the Reds podcast. It's pretty funny how that worked out. But what are your thoughts on Ashcraft? I know Joey Votto, I don't know if you saw that video about him, like, just gushing over how good Ashcraft stuff. And when they asked him in an interview at spring training, so the stuff is there. Is it going to translate to results for Ashcraft this year?
I think so. I mean, it's just the cutters are insane. Like, he could literally throw that cutter the whole game and be like Emmanuel Clase, yeah, and just throw 100-mile-an-hour cutters and no one will hit it. I like the strikeout potential. You know, it was 10.3 per nine in his three seasons in the minors. A great ground ball rate. I think with pitchers who threw over 100 innings last year, his ground ball rate was, he was ranked one spot ahead of Sandy Alcantara, yeah, with a 54% ground, yeah, ball rate. So guys aren't squaring him up if they're making contact at all. So I like getting in on a guy like that who's very, he's just such great stuff, and you hope he can just hone it. And the thing is, he doesn't need to hit his spots. Like, guys, if he misses his spot, it's going to be 100 with cut. Yeah. Like, good luck elevating that. So I like him. The ballpark's tough, though. So
it is. One thing. But it's the kind of tools that I just always bet on, like a great ground ball rate, elite strikeout potential. Like, I'll bet on Graham Ashcraft like every single year he's in the league. Like, it's gonna happen eventually. And I think with him, his stuff is so good that'll happen sooner rather than later. If he's out there like in any leagues. I know the first start was good, so he might not be anymore, but I absolutely would add him. And they have a tough matchup this week, I think, versus the Phillies. So you'll be glued to this in your hatred of the Phillies as a Mets fan.
I mean,
this weekend versus the Phillies, it's Green, Lodolo, Ashcraft, which is really, really cool.
You're rolling into a series and you're getting Hunter Green, Nick Lodolo, and Graham Ashcraft. Yeah. Like, Lodolo throwing, you know, 97 miles an hour
from the left side, yeah.
On the left side, yeah. Like, oh my god! Yeah. And then you're getting Hunter Green throwing 100, 105.
Yeah, yeah.
The stuff is awesome. Yeah. So it, you know, the Reds are kind of an interesting team to look at fantasy wise, even though they're going to stink this year.
Yeah, it definitely an interesting team, and maybe. I know people got on them and their owner isn't great. And yeah, you know, they probably sold off assets quicker than they should have and have been super cheap, but they do have a good amount of talent. I know they have like Ellie De La Cruz coming, which is really, really exciting. They got a good haul for Castillo prospect wise, Novelli Marte. So they got some, they're doing some interesting stuff in Cincinnati. I like Cincinnati futures.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm like I'm like the biggest Jonathan India guy.
Yeah, he's like good cut.
He was so good his rookie year, and last year he was hurt. He was just hurt. Everyone was like,
yeah.
And like, why? So like, everyone was like, he's done. Like, he's such a good baseball player. He's a great hitter. So, and you know what? The thing with the Reds is, since they're not so high profile, you might be able to get shares of their guys because they're the Reds and they stink.
Yes, that's a great.
So they're not getting eyeballs, and you're going to be able to, you know, get them at a depressed value.
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity. All right, a few more names here quickly, but sure. Noteworthy. Justin Steele, a guy who I think he had a good amount of hype going into draft season, but not that much considering some really solid starts that he had last year. I know Van was all over Justin Steele last year, hyped him up a bunch. There was quite a few 10 strikeout games from Justin Steele last year, and the slider was legit. I know Nick Pollock talks about it.
One of the best in baseball.
The slider is always going to be there. It's one of the best pitches in baseball. It's just a matter of if he's able to do it with the fastball. And through one start, he was. He had a 38% strikeout rate in his first start. Really, really good. Do you think Justin Steele was like all formats worthy? Like, would you start him in most matchups, all matchups? Anywhere but Cora sort of thing.
I would start him in all matchups at this point. The Cubs are improved. They look like they'll be able to score some runs at least finally with Swanson. Bellinger being a little bit okay. Wisdom looks like he's rebounding. You know, the offense isn't bad. I like Steele. I think he's nasty. I saw his second half ERA was 0.98. Wow. Like I also saw the slider's a great pitch, and he was getting like whiff rates that were over 30% on it. I saw this is a great one though. His curveball, the batting average against his curveball was zero last year.
I love that.
there's just stuff galore, and I'm in. I think, he's like a name that kind of slipped through the cracks a little bit.
Didn't have the prospect hype, yeah.
Right. If you can get him now, pick him up. I don't think in deeper leagues he's probably not available. But
in shallow, like 12 teams, he definitely was out there as a streaming option, and now might be held onto. But like sometimes when people stream, right, like it's like okay, add him, good start, on to the next one, right? Them, you know,
yeah.
There might be a little bit more potential than that with Steele. At least
I'm kicking myself because I don't see the difference. But I know Lizardo is a better pitcher and better profile, but I'm looking at both of them as lefties, and I'm wondering why one is going undrafted or 10 rounds later than the other. And that's kind of where you can make up your ground. So I'm kind of kicking myself.
It's like the Walmart brand or Costco brand Lizardo. Lizardo looks really, really good. Right. Amazing velocity, added velocity. Breakout might be happening, but Justin Steele could be there for free essentially. Whereas like Lizardo right now, like no one's trading him because like they potentially have an ace, but you could have a really valuable fantasy starter and Justin Steele maybe for free sitting on your wire. It would be remiss if I did not let you come on this podcast and talk about how nasty Kodai Senga is and his ghost fork and what you saw from that start. I know you were dialed into that as a Mets fan, but what are your thoughts there? I know there was some shaky control in the beginning, but what are your thoughts on Senga?
Yeah, listen, the control is going to be an issue. The walks were high last year in Japan. I think he was a little too amped up, but I think that the coming out of it, I mean, the split is disgusting. It drops, it moves sideways. It's just something that major leaguers haven't seen before. And you layer that over with, he touched 99. Like this isn't somebody who's sitting at 93, 94. Like he was sitting at 96, 97, gassed it up to 99. The slider could use a little work, but when you have a splitter and a fastball like that, you really only need a third offering to kind of keep people honest. I was impressed at his fortitude to battle through that. it was the Marlins who are kind of like, he ate guys up like Solaire and Jazz Chisholm for lunch. Yeah. So I'd like to see him against a little bit more of a patient team who can kind of wear him down a little bit. But I was really impressed. If you know, he was going later in rounds than I thought in a lot of leagues. He was kind of buried on the Yahoo queue I saw. I don't know where he was in the fan tracks, but I think people got fair value on him in leagues where there was Mets fans trying to grab him. And now you might be looking at, you know, maybe not a one, but a nice number two, you know,
so high strikeout. Like may have a blow up start here or there, but definitely has the potential to strike out and, you know, give you a lot of quality innings. Like, you know, on days where he has control, there's going to be amazing, amazing starts. Two other guys that I wanted to mention before we wrap up. One, Kenta Maeda, who looked really, really good in his first start back. I know there was concern that he left the trainer, but it seems like it was just fatigue. He was one of the guys that, you know, I knew Van was in India, but I texted him like, hey, Maeda looks really, really good. Struck out 9 guys in 5 innings, just to give him a heads up on, you know, just to keep him on the big highlights. And then another one is Jack Flaherty, who had, I believe, 5 no-hit innings, but looked pretty, pretty tough. I think he had 7 walks. The fastball velocity was just 91.5. That was down from 93.4 last year and then 94 in 2021 and 2020, when he was really good in 2019, when he had that amazing second half. It was 94.5. So 3 ticks lower from that, you know, peak Jack Flaherty. Just does not look like himself. What are your thoughts? I guess 1 good, 1 bad, and the fact that Kenta Maeda come back from injury, and now Jack Flaherty came back from injury last year, where he just threw 36 innings. 1 looked good, 1 looked bad. What are your thoughts quickly on both those guys before we wrap up?
Maeda, the ceiling is low, but the floor is high. It's a guy who can, you know, churn out quality starts if you need it. You're not going to get the 2020 second in Cy Young with 0.7 or whatever. But, you know, he's a guy that during a fantasy season, you can rely on a guy who can be take the ball every fifth day and give you quality innings. And Maeda is that. And he's making no money for the Twins. And it's a team that, you know, needs starting pitching, and they're going to lean on him heavy. First start was great. He didn't walk anybody, 9 Ks, 3 hits.
Marlins stuff. So a little cold water, but
yeah. Yeah, he's tough though. I don't think the year he missed last year, right? And then the year before that, he wasn't very good.
Yeah, and like the year before that, like there was a lot of hype on him coming out of 2020. I think like he kind of was hurt in spring training, then pitched like the first 2 months, and it was like up TJ. Like it seemed like he tried to avoid Tommy John for 2 months essentially, and wasn't good. So I'm willing to write off his 2021, that year that he came back and eventually had
kind of a sneaky strikeout. Yeah. Too. Yeah. Like, you know, in 2020, it was 10.8, but then 2021, 9.6. And then he struck out 9 guys in 5 innings this year. So like, you don't really think of Maeda as a guy who can strikes a lot of guys out, but if you're getting quality starts from him when he's striking out like 6, 7, 8 guys, there's worse things to have.
He's a 2-3 upside guy that gets a lot of strikeouts, and I kind of love those guys for your staff, because like at the very least you're going to get strikeouts, and even in not so great starts, that's kind of why I think that those guys are more valuable than just like your steady Eddie 8K per 9 3.5 ERAs. Like I'd rather have the 3.80 ERAs with the 10 strikeout 9, you know,
and I think I take the ball every
I
fifth
think
day.
That's kind of what Maeda can do. And if he's healthy, like knock on wood about that, it was just a fatigue thing. There could be a really useful fantasy pitcher there. In Flaherty, like I drafted him last year as a sleeper, you know, his bounce back. Yeah. Like I just don't see it. And like, unless he comes out and starts pumping 95 again, I have no interest.
Yeah. Flaherty is like the vintage tin stack. Like there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. Cause if you would have seen that guy from when he got drafted and then when he came up, you'd be like, this guy is going to be a perennial Cy Young. hitting glove side with like 98 mile an hour with a razor blade slider, and the motion is so beautiful. Yeah. The thing with
Flaherty, I love when Flaherty's good. I love when he's good. He's one of my favorite pitchers.
It's,
yes,
it's. I agree, but the price people paid to get him this year, there's like, you're basically, if we're talking to you and Flaherty is important, you have him because no one else is looking to get him, and you're kind of stuck at this point. Hopefully he's not hurt. I watched the first inning against the Blue Jays. He was like all over the place. And then he kind of got out of it with like a 3-2 slider. And like, I got out of the bases loaded, but that inning could have been a blow up. It just shows you that pitching, you never know. A guy like him, I wouldn't be investing in, but weirder things have happened. So who knows?
It's true. It's true. I just would need to see the velocity first come back. Hate to end that on a end this on a down note, especially for Van with his boy Jack Flaherty in St. Louis. But hey, he's got Brendan Donovan hitting homers every night for him there. So he'll have.
Actually, one thing: the Francisco Alvarez news. We can touch on Narvaez got hurt today, I think, or tweaked something. You know, the Mets haven't been scoring runs. I know it's five games in, but people are six, seven games. People are flipping out. But Alvarez homered, I think, today. I think he homered today. And I think he's maybe got two already this year for Syracuse. And he's in New York now, or, you know, he's at Citi Field or in New York ready to go if Narvaez goes on the DL. So you could see him DHing, which would be awesome because I called him up last year to DH. You could see him catching. I think DH might actually be something he might do. They don't get Lizardo. They get Edward Cabrera and they get Sandy again. They always face. I don't know who that third starter is going to be, but you know, if Alvarez is up, grab him because he's catcher eligible and he's going to stay if he hits.
It's worth seeing at least have him on your roster for if he is actually officially called up, because he is there as a potential call up if Narvaez needs to go on the IL. So yes, great call there. Should have got to that earlier with you tapped into the Mets news. But Dan, this was awesome. It's fun doing this in a more formal setting. It's our normal baseball conversations. But thank you for filling in. You did a great job filling in those big shoes of Van. I hope I did okay in my hosting duties. I know I normally sit back and kick at the Van with all of his great transitions and keeps me in line with my rambles. So, but this was a lot of fun. Thanks again for coming on.
Anytime you need to fill in, I'm happy to do it. I'm glad we didn't touch on our fantasy matchup where you're kind of kicking my butt a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's early.
It's early and no one wants to hear about our own fantasy team.
So about your fantasy team. Exactly, right. But
you know,
thank you for having
me. Touch. And yeah, we'll do it when Van's on too. We'll get everybody together, which would be fun. But that about wraps us up for episode 94 of Wins Above Fantasy. Again, I probably should have plugged this earlier, but you could follow us at Wins Above Pod on Twitter. I am at Stav8818. My co-host Van is at Van_verified. And Dan, we'll plug your Twitter. You are at DTWEB313, DTWEB313. Give our man a follow on Twitter. Thanks again for tuning in, guys. A lot of fun. We'll talk to you guys next Thursday. Later.